This is a first for the Logan Board of Education. We had prelude music. We've never had that before. And I have to tell you, I love Lord of the Rings, and I love string music, and it made me emotional. I have to conduct the rest of this meeting, so I'm going to put on my non-mom hat and hopefully run the meeting without tears. This is the Board of Education of the Logan City School District. We are meeting in our regular board meeting. Today is Tuesday, March 12, 2019. The location is the boardroom of the Logan City School District office. The Board of Education met earlier for a site visit at 12:30 at Bridger Elementary, and also we had a closed session at 3 o'clock regarding the character, professional competence, or physical or mental health of an individual. It is now 5:02, and those present are Board President Ann Geary, Board Vice President Jenny Johnson, Board Members Christy Cooley, Frank Stewart, Larry Williams, our Business Administrator Jeff Barbin, our Superintendent Frank Schofield, our Board Secretary Shelley Bowman. We also have District Office Administration, School Administration, School Staff, Parents, Students, and the Press. We welcome you here tonight. The mission of the Logan Board of Education and the Logan City School District is to ensure all students leave our schools ready to create a positive future for themselves and their community. As you came in, there was an agenda as well as rules of order that by law we are to have and made available to those who are in attendance. Our rules of order and procedure. The Board of Education follows a simplified Robert's Rule of Order to conduct its business. There is a designated public comment time on the agenda, and during that public comment time, there are certain rules that follow. The rest of the time, it's basically those who are already on the agenda to present. If you would like to sign up for public comment, there is a sign-up board over there, and we would love to have anyone who would like to make comment do so. And you have up until we get to that point of the agenda to sign up. We will begin our meeting tonight. First, of course, we had wonderful music, Lord of the Rings music, and before that, other music by our All-State Orchestra from both Mount Logan Middle School and Logan High. It was took in ages for the middle school and the and ninth grades, which is junior high. And we're just so thrilled at how well you represented us, and we're thrilled to have you here tonight. We are going to have the Pledge of Allegiance led by one of the members of this group, Gordon Kerr.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We will be getting back to these students in just a minute, but we are going to first recognize a Logan High student as the President's Service Award at Logan High School. Eric Markworth will tell us about this award.
So, unfortunately, I don't see Taylor. I don't think she was able to make it. But we just wanted to recognize Taylor Fang. She received the Presidential Volunteer Service Award for doing service inside of our community. And so, I've known Taylor for a very long time, going back to when she was a kindergartner at Hillcrest, and it's been fun to see her continue to grow, and she really does embody, we put this on our Facebook page, but she does really embody the district mission of ensuring that all students have a positive impact on their community, and so we just wanted to recognize Taylor for this award, so I guess I could just take that to her, if that's okay.
Thank you.
So let's give her a posthumous, maybe, applause. Thank you.
Our next award is from the Utah Coalition for Educational Technology Outstanding Leader of the Year, and it is our Technology Director, David Long. Dave, come on up. I've asked the superintendent to please tell about this award.
So Dave was nominated for this award by a member of the Utah Education Technology Network Board of Directors. They work with Dave regularly on the tech initiatives that we have in place here in the district. Let me just share a couple of things that people who wrote in as part of the nomination process shared about Dave. So David is an amazing educational technology leader. David has made an incredible impact on how we as technology professionals and educators support and effectively implement technology to enhance the learning environment in the classroom. He's definitely one of the most effective and influential technology leaders in the state. My statement to them was, Dave has a clear vision of how technology can be used to enhance teacher performance and student learning. He recognizes the positive disruption that occurs when educators are aware of the potential impact of technology, then receive the necessary support to apply technology in focused, deliberative ways. Dave, if you visit with him a little bit about the potential role of technology in learning, you get a very clear picture that this is a gentleman who understands what effective instruction looks like. He understands that effective instruction can never be replaced by a technological device, but that technology can be used in many cases to support what's being done in the classroom. One of the greatest examples I saw this, Dave, something that many people don't know is he's actually quite an accomplished artist. He paints. And this is something that's in the bloodline. It's come down in the family. But he, when he got an iPad Pro, the first thing he did was start looking at what can I do artistically on the iPad Pro. And he started finding new ways to do pencil sketches and black line drawings and et cetera, et cetera. And he found ways where technology supported his interest and was something he wanted to improve at and continue to practice. And he carries that same insight into his desire to support effective teaching and learning across the district with the appropriate use of technology to support that. So I can't say enough about how grateful I am for what he contributes to our district with that, as well as the environment in the state of Utah in how technology can appropriately support education. So we're extremely proud that he's received this recognition from USET.
The Board of Education, I'm going to actually pass this down so board members can look at this. Thank you, Dave. He also takes care of our mics in here. The Logan City Board of Education honors David Long, Director of Technology and Student Services, for receiving the Utah Coalition for Educational Technology Outstanding Leader of the Year. The board recognizes you for your talent, your service, your teamwork, and all you do to dedicate yourself for the students in this district. Thank you so much, Dave. He would come around and shake our hands, but we want to recognize Dave. Thank you. And thank you, Dave.
He was.
Yes, he was a student athlete, but not on this receipt. Our next area that we're going to recognize is our, I'm going to change it, board members. We're going to go instead of academic all-state because I don't think all of them have arrived. We're going to recognize our Mount Logan Middle School and Logan High School all-state orchestra members. I've asked Heidi Parker to introduce these students for us and what it takes to be able to be part of this orchestra. And you may bring her up. We love children. She can be part of this presentation, too.
I guess I don't need a microphone. So the Allstate Junior High Orchestra involves 6th through 9th grade students throughout the state of Utah.
Well, no.
And they, so they submitted an audition back in October, and they...
Autumn?
Vivaldi was one of my favorite composers when I played violin. We want to recognize these students, and you know what? I think, Superintendent, I'm going to, well, you have their names. I'm going to pass these out to them because they have their instruments, and we care for instruments in this district. So when the superintendent announces your name, if you'll please stand up.
To whom? Quag? Gordon Kiar.
Here.
Andrew Decker.
Okay.
Sydney Thorne. Haley Bartholomew. Is it Hallie?
Okay.
Hailey. James Raymond. Chloe Sanders. Lena Hawkins Strand. And then our Logan High student is not here, is Lisa Wilson.
And we know you'd all love to stay to our long meeting. We recognize you have other things going on in your lives. Now we would like to recognize the Logan High School Academic All-State students. Ken Ald, our principal. If these students are here, if they'll come up front when we announce their name.
So as it's kind of low.
You can move it. Sorry. Or just pick it up.
So as you know, Academic All-State is a really difficult award to achieve because you have to have a 4.0, and these students are really busy, busy students. They have no free time. Their free time is really taken up by school activities, athletics, and they commit a lot of their free time to being an athlete or being a great musician, and it's a tremendous sacrifice for these students and still maintain outstanding school academics. So we'll go through the names. Gari Garg, she's not here. Meridian Wapit, not here. Ari Geller, not here. Charles Merriam.
You get to hold
those. You're going to go through them? Benjamin Anderson, Hannah Eves, Juliet Hart, Pershell Royer, Lindsay Samitsky, Lydia Wallace, Alyssa Warner, Abigail Wheeler, Luke Facer, Jonathan Parkinson, and that is it.
Okay, and if I could just like to, so you were in, let's see what your sport was. So Luke was in basketball, and Alyssa, you were in music, and Lindsay was in music also. So, you know, we really represented, Logan High really did well to have two students in music and many of the other areas. As they said, these are our brightest, and we are just so thankful you came tonight, and we just want to recognize you for your talent, your service, your teamwork, your dedication as a student athlete, and we wish you success in all your future academic and athletic adventures. Thank you so much. And if you will, you've got to turn around and shake hands with all the girls. And then we need you back for a picture.
Oh, yep, she wants your picture, sorry.
You gotta come back.
And before all of that group leaves, I also want to recognize Alyssa's mother. Terrell Warner has been the Region 1 member of the Board of Education, State Board of Education, for a number of years. She has represented us so well. And we miss you being there, Terrell. You really did an amazing service for us, so thank you so very much.
Please join me in.
We love this time of year because we have so many awards. This is a really fun one. Could we have, and I don't say your whole name right, could we have Nev come forward? Some of you may have read in the newspaper that, okay, say your name correctly so it's done with the right emphasis in your language.
Nev.
Oh. I do Nev well. Nev was chosen by Brigham Young University as the David O. McKay School of Education Teacher of the Year. So these are all the people who have graduated from BYU in education. He was their outstanding teacher this year. And we are just so impressed with all that. This is a very well-received award because Nev does amazing things. And I think it's a body of both his artistic talent and all of the students he's taught for so many years. And we just, as a board, want to recognize him receiving this award. And thank you for all that you do and have done and will do for our students, especially in the area of arts. Thank you so much, Nev.
My favorite story about Nev as an educator is something he did years ago when he was actually working with the students at South Campus. And Nev, I'm sure you all know this, but for those who don't, Nev is, of course, an accomplished sculptor, but also an accomplished woodcarver. And when he was teaching the students, he would teach them how to carve a person's life story into canes. And then he would also teach them how to write life histories, and they would go to Sunshine Terrace and visit with retirees and ask them to do oral histories, ask them about their lives. They would then write the individual's life history and carve their story into a cane and then present the cane and the life history to the retirees at Sunshine Terrace. Every time I have told that story, and I won't tell Nev how many times I've told that story to friends across the state, every time they hear that, they gush about what an amazing example that is of service learning, of making art relevant, of tying art to other pieces of the curriculum. And that's reflective of how Nev approaches education. It's from my personal connections, it's how Nev approaches life. It's how he approaches working with young people. And that is what makes him such a powerful teacher and such a credit to the profession and a credit to our district. It's also a reflection of the department that he works with. I mean, Nev and Jeff and Roger together create that feel in every field of art that they teach and every class that they run. And that is what makes it such a powerful piece of what makes Logan High a great place. And it starts with individuals. And in this case, we're very excited to be able to honor Nev. I guess we're just recognizing the honor he got from somebody else. But we still want to celebrate that for the amazing work that he does with our students and the benefit that that provides to them. So thank you, Nev.
And we want to recognize the students of those three amazing teachers. We have, I know we won't have all of them because, again, these are our really busy kids who do amazing things. So I will read some names. We have some different art competitions that Logan High students attended and that they have received awards in, and I'm going to read them. And if those students are here, please come up, and you may be read twice because I have two different big piles. First of all, we want to recognize Monson Brown for stone sculpture best of show in 3D art at the Springville 47th Annual Utah All-State High School Art Show. Congratulations. We want to recognize Colette Held for her painting, Flower Basket, and painting
Guevara on Edge.
It's oil on canvas, and she represented Logan High in that same Springville art show. She received a Master Academy of Arts scholarship. We have Laura Strong, who is being recognized for her painting, Glazed Apples and Pail, which was oil on canvas. Harsar Lynn, painting Enlightenment, which was mixed media. Will you say your name correctly? I know I slaughtered it.
Sarsar Lewin.
That's correct. You've been here before. And you are very talented. And she also received that at the Springville 47th Annual Art Show. Congratulations. Mariah Benson, The Abandoned Staircase, Digital Photography. At the Springville Art Show. Congratulations, Mariah. There you go.
Anne, can you say that again? I didn't hear what hers was.
It was.
What was your medium?
Photography. Kate Jenkins, another photography, Moon Over St. George, a digital photography. And Justin Bentz, say it.
Lucas Lavia.
Or I should just let Justin say it. Say it. Can you say it correctly? For your, and what's the name of your title of your stone sculpture?
Luchas en la vida.
Stone sculpture, congratulations.
Struggles in life.
I have a hard time with struggles in life. That's a good thing for me to know. Justin, let's have you come back for the same piece, and that's a different one, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Comienzo de la vida.
And this was, he was chosen his stone sculpture best of show, and this was in the Northern Utah High School Art Competition Exhibit Show, and this is the first time a 3D art has ever won the entire show. Best of show came with a $5,000 scholarship award. Congratulations. And then Ashley Barton, Her Wings stone sculpture, and this was again at the Northern Utah High School Art Competition, and she was able to sell her piece to a collector for $600. So amazing students at Logan High School. Thank you, and thank you for representing us, and we really are excited for your futures in art and everything else. We need a picture, and then we'll have you shake hands. Oh, and you know what? I didn't do this with the rest. Will the parents of those who were here please raise your hands, of those who were recognized? I should have done it earlier on all of our others. Thank you for what your support.
Mason, thank you. What happened to your graduation?
Me?
Where's your scholarship going to be?
I know. I saw you brought a book. I'd love to see their pictures. Is that
congratulations. I love your graduation. You're awesome.
It's not great.
My father
was one of your...
Thanks for bringing these.
Yeah. He was in the Herald's room. Fast way, 9 years ago. That's one of my favorite memorabilities of this. Thank you.
When my husband retired 2 years ago, the hospital had Nev do him a walking stick. He also created me one and also gave us a stone sculpture. And they are treasures. Very talented, talented people we have.
And yes. If I might, I would just mention to Nev that my father passed away at age 96 9 years ago. But he was one of those carved kings. Aww. and his picture was in the Herald Journal with his cane. I have that at my house. So one of our Preppers memorabilia. So.
You know, and we never know how far something we do, how far it passes on, and I'm sure that's a treasure in your family and always will be. Those are really special sticks. Our next item of business is our superintendent report, promoting academic rigor at Logan High School. And we hope this new one works.
It looks good on stone.
It does look good on stone, doesn't it? It looks better than it used to. And notice over on the side, I tried to erase what's behind Shelley. It kind of frames her. Someone did that in permanent marker on the whiteboard.
All right, I apologize to our patrons, but we are having some trouble with our screen and the system, so I will be going off what the board has in board book this evening so we can finish getting that screen repaired and working. So what we want to do is talk a little bit about what we are doing to promote rigor at Logan High School, talk a little bit about why that's important, what we mean by rigor, and give you a little bit of a preview. Much of this will be shared in our patron meeting tomorrow evening at the high school as we talk about the level diplomas. So this is content that has been reviewed by our Logan High School graduation committee as they've been reviewing the idea of diplomas and how we promote this idea of rigor with all of our students at Logan High School. So first, the definition that we're using of rigor is the difference between what is challenging versus what is frustrating to a student. When we talk about rigor, we're talking about students being challenged to think, perform, and grow at levels that they previously have not been at. They have to work to build their understanding, their skills, their thinking power. They're compelled to grow, but they're not frustrated. They're challenged, but they're not overextended. And the reason we look at that is because we feel like the benefits of rigor for our students go far beyond just the academic content that they learn during their time in school. It's first of all, that is important. One of the reasons why rigor is something that we want to consider is there are studies, and you have some of them, one of them referenced there in your presentation, that talks about how arriving at college academically prepared to do college-level work is among the most predictive factors of collegiate success. So one reason for promoting the idea of rigor is that it helps students be more successful in their post-secondary studies. The other part is our district mission is to ensure all students leave our schools ready to create a positive future for themselves and their community. The ability to create a positive future for oneself and for the community that we live in is influenced by our ability to persevere, our ability to take on challenges, our ability to manage those challenges successfully, and rigor is something that contributes to that. Again, it has to be structured and supported in a way that it is challenging while not being overwhelming. And at Logan High School, we have a number of pathways to accomplishing that idea of rigor. One of them, you know, the ones that we typically think of are AP, Advanced Placement, and Concurrent Enrollment classes. And those are things that nationally are traditionally considered as examples of high rigor. As we met with the diploma committee, we had a conversation about are there other ways that address that definition of rigor, that concept of stretch, that concept of helping students extend past where they currently are and have to persevere and develop a little bit of grit as they do that. And we did come up with some of the other examples. Successful completion of a progressive course of study, that would be 3 years or more, in a given content area. So if you have Secondary Math 1, Secondary Math 2, Secondary Math 3, or Secondary Math 2, 3, and Pre-Calculus, that would be a progressive course of study that is leading to higher levels of preparation for post-secondary education. If you have 3 consecutive years of a progressive course of study in science, at least 3 years of a progressive course of study in world languages, those would be examples of rigor, still academic and still pushing to higher levels of achievement. If you're looking at completion of a CTE pathway, We feel as you look at the pathways that we offer at Logan High School, those would be examples of rigor. The CTE courses that we currently offer pathways in are challenging in many ways. Recognition for artistic excellence. Now, that gets a little bit tricky in terms of how you look at classes, because we don't always have students who pursue a progressive course of study in music, but they may, for example, receive a superior rating at a state-level competition, something like that. So the committee really bought into this idea that rigor is a broader concept than sometimes we've traditionally considered it. Rigor is the idea of pushing past our current levels of understanding, of ability, stretching ourselves, and developing those skills. And that can be done in a number of content areas and in a number of ways. So the question has been, how do we get more students engaging in a rigorous course of study? And that's one of the reasons why we've considered a recommendation to pursue the level diplomas, is the tool that they provide for having conversations about rigor with students and parents earlier on in a student's academic career. So how can we have these conversations and clarify to people there are multiple opportunities to experience rigor in school? What does that look like? How can we set students up for success? The additional piece is the registration process. So what the high school is currently doing is, first, they have the normal course registration process. We are doing more of it during the school day, so students have access to teachers and counselors to receive some guidance and answer questions. One of the new pieces is our staff has worked to identify the students whose attendance and current academic performance suggest that they could be successful with a more rigorous course of study, but perhaps they aren't currently taking those classes. And there are a number of reasons why they aren't. These students may be concerned about the impact a class will have on their GPA. These students may be concerned, they may be concerned they don't have friends in the class. There could be a number of reasons why a student might not take a quote-unquote more rigorous course of study. So what we're doing is identifying who those students are, and staff are working to extend personal invitations to these students to take these more rigorous classes. One thing that the research out there currently suggests is that if you want a student to take more challenging classes, the person who has the biggest impact on that is the classroom teacher. That has a bigger impact than the counselor, even their peers, because the classroom teacher is viewed as the expert in the field, and if this person is telling me that I can be successful, that makes me feel like, okay, I can probably do it. So our teachers at the high school are identifying these students, and I appreciate the effort they're putting into this, to extend personal invitations to students to take a higher level class or a more rigorous course of study. And that may be completing a pathway or taking an AP class or taking a concurrent enrollment class, because we want more students to experience the benefits of rigor. One of the interesting things that we're seeing with this and that we're hoping to address is, as you talk to people at the university, as you talk to people at the high school, middle school, any grade level, there is a significant emphasis on the grade that a student receives. And there are some structural things that we need to change with that. When our focus is on the grade as opposed to what's being learned, there's a tendency for people to start to avoid learning opportunities. They start to avoid rigor because there's a fear of, if I stretch myself and maybe this isn't something that I'm currently skilled at, that's going to start affecting my grade and my GPA. Let me give you one example of a current student. One of our seniors at Logan High has been accepted to a fairly prestigious out-of-state school and received a full-ride scholarship, academic scholarship, to that school. Very proud of the student, did an outstanding work. The receipt of the scholarship was dependent on the student having a 4.0 GPA. Okay, the student achieved that, received the scholarship. The scholarship then has the stipulation that that 4.0 GPA has to be maintained through the end of high school. Now, that course or that scholarship was awarded early in the year. So if a student now has received a full-ride scholarship to a fairly costly university And now it's told they have to maintain that 4.0 in order to maintain the scholarship. What disincentive is there to that student to continue to take rigorous courses the last half of their senior year? The structure and the focus on the grade discourages students from pursuing a rigorous course of study. We need to work to change the mindset from, and this is not just a K-12 issue, this is a university issue as well, because obviously the structure of this came from a university. But we need to work to help students recognize that the important thing right now is growth, continued progress, and learning, and that means you continue to stretch yourself. You continue to push, you know, past what you perceive might be your limits or what your immediate comfort level is, because as students leave our schools and go out into post-secondary life, their success is going to be influenced by their ability and their willingness to take on challenges, even when they perceive they may not be immediately successful with that. So one of the reasons why we want to promote rigor with more students is to develop that mindset. Develop that growth mindset of, I continue to grow, I continue to make progress, and support them so they can be successful. There are conversations occurring with higher education about how we start to move away from that emphasis on the grade. We've had some parents in our district who are university professors who were on our diploma committee, and that was one of the concerns they expressed. So it is something that we are trying to take care of as we have ongoing conversations about rigor. So our path moving forward is to continue to extend those invitations. Right now, as I've communicated with you all previously, our AP and concurrent enrollment offerings are strong and they're ongoing. This year, we offered 32 AP or concurrent enrollment classes at the high school. They're planning to add another AP and possibly up to 4 more concurrent enrollment courses because of the additional invitations that are being extended. Because our staff at the high school has accepted the challenge to say, you know what, more of our students could be pursuing a rigorous course of study, and we can help them be successful. Let's identify those students. Let's bring them in. Let's support them and help them succeed with that. So I'm extremely proud of our teachers who have taken that challenge on, because that is a change in mindset. That's a change in how we've approached registration in the past. But it is something that our staff really is in a position to make significant changes for the positive for all of our students at Logan High School. And that will help us help more of our students achieve our mission of ensuring that they are prepared when they leave our schools to create a positive future for themselves and for their community. So I just wanted to give you some more details on that. We'll share this with some additional structural details about the level diplomas at our patron meeting tomorrow night. But I think it's something that we should be celebrating about Logan High, and something that our teachers and our administrators at our school are doing to reach more of our students and help them achieve all that they're capable of while they're in our schools. So thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Our next item of business is our consent calendar. We need action on board minutes dated February 26, 2019. And also board elections licensed personnel and board elections classified personnel. Is there a motion regarding this consent calendar?
I'll make a motion that we approve the consent calendar as stated.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved by Christy Cooley and seconded by Jenny Johnson. All those in favor of approving the consent calendar say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Our next item is public comment. Did we have anyone sign up for public comment? All right, we will move past public comment. We next go to our action items. The first action item is policies recommended for adoption. Superintendent.
Thank you. So you'll see we have 3 policies for consideration for the board this week. The first one, FBA, eligibility and admission requirements, simply goes through the legal requirements or the legal definitions of residency and when a child qualifies as a resident of a district, of our district. You'll see under the alternative district of residency the procedure that is in place for when a parent or guardian resides in Utah but not within the district, but the student does reside in our district, how the parent can request that our district become an alternative district of residency. There are situations where that has occurred. Some of you may recall that last year there was a piece of legislation at the state level that made it so when a student, let's say you have a student who lives in Nephi and they are receiving long-term treatment at Primary Children's, that their district of residency becomes the Salt Lake City School District, and the Salt Lake City School District receives the WPU for that child, and they provide services while the child is in the hospital. This policy simply reflects the statutory language that stipulates how a child's district of residency is determined.
Any questions regarding this policy? We had it last time. We did do some clarification, took out the school board reference. Instead, it's the district or the board's representative. Yes, Frank.
And have you found anything in the legislative session that reflects anything linked to this?
Not yet, but we have till Thursday. But we'd rather adopt it and then amend it as needed rather than not adopt it. Since last year they recodified all of public education, we're wanting to adopt all of those policies with the correct reference, and then we can go back and change as needed with this, any changes they make this legislative session. In the past, we've kind of said, let's wait till the legislature's over, but we have so many to adopt, we hate to just hold off until they're done. We have stayed away from those that we know they're tweaking right now, for sure.
So we did clarify, based on the feedback in our last meeting, the only references to the board making approval are where it specifically states in the statute that it has to be the board. Otherwise, we've gone through and we've replaced or clarified the language so that the superintendent is always the board's designee and the director of student services is the review official. So the review official is the one who looks at the applications, the request, reviews them, and then if there's a need for further discussion, it would come to me, and then if there were concerns, then it could come to the board. So we have gone through and clarified all of those.
Yeah, it's spelled out much better than previously. Do you want to do individual policies or policies as a whole? Okay, if there are no changes. Oh,
sorry, the only comment that I would have is that on this one, it's usually in the past we've sent all policies to a second reading unless they're urgent, just because then we can get feedback from patrons or people to if they have any feedback on the policy. So I would propose and I would make a motion that we accept the eligibility and admissions requirements policy because it's gone to its second reading.
All right. One of the things we talked about previously when you were serving as board president is to adopt more of these in the bulk since they were, you know, from the USBA template. If you're wanting to change that process, we were doing that so we could get through more of them instead of doing multiple readings on especially those that were state law.
I'll withdraw my motion.
Okay. Is there a new motion?
Well, we haven't looked
okay.
at the other
Okay. Then great. Let's look at the other ones then. This is the second reading for this one. If you want to adopt this one on the second reading, that's very appropriate. Okay, Christy Cooley moved that we
already withdraw my
motion. Okay, all right. Okay, Superintendent. Okay,
so policy FHC, notification received from juvenile courts, states, and you'll see the statutory link is down there to the Utah Code, but simply states that when a juvenile is taken into custody by a law enforcement agency for a crime of violence, they notify the superintendent, and within 3 days, the superintendent is required to notify the school principal so they are aware. That's all this policy states is that it has to be recorded, it has to be communicated. It doesn't go into the student's permanent file, but the superintendent is required to notify relevant staff that this has occurred.
Right. And then FJ.
FJ, students leaving with an adult during school hours. This clarifies who is able to check a student out from school. So that first paragraph, It says, no person shall be allowed to remove a student from school during the school day unless the person reports first to the principal or designee, and one of the following circumstances is true. They're the custodial, parent, or legal guardian, they have a validly issued subpoena, or they are properly identified law enforcement officer. In case of emergency, and we have some definitions there, the school may release a student to an individual identified by the custodial parent as an emergency contact if attempts to first make contact with the custodial parent are unsuccessful. So a grandparent, a family member, etc., may pick up a student, but they have to be listed by the parent as one of the emergency contacts with permission to pick them up. Otherwise, they cannot be released without first communicating to the parent. So this is just to clarify in cases of, this is particularly important when you're looking at custody disputes, issues like that, clarification on who is allowed to pick up a child from school and who is not. And it's not simply the picking up, so this does not refer to who is able to pick up the student in the carpool lane. This is who is checking a student out of school, removing them from school during the day.
Any questions on any of these policies? Okay, I would accept a motion on these policies.
I would recommend that since we do not have any other policies that need to be rescinded, that we accept the three policies as described, FBA eligibility, FHC notification, and FJ student policies.
Okay, it has been moved by Frank Stewart to adopt these policies. Is there a second?
I'll second them.
All right. All those in favor of adopting FBA eligibility and admission requirements, FHC notification received from juvenile courts, and FJ students leaving with adults during school day, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. We will move on to the next one. Now, what's interesting when I open this up, it is, at least in mine, is the wrong one. It says policies recommended for adoption. Is that what you get? Do you get an action sheet?
I scrolled down. Well, it brought down.
Okay, but I'm going into individual things, so I can't do it on the iPad. So let me read what's in Jenny's.
The next one is just the.
Okay. I asked for a change to be made, and I do everything through the. Actually, if you go into the app on your iPad, it lets you take notes and make changes on things. So that's what I usually use, but it has the wrong thing in there. So I will, and it doesn't have anything about the superintendent. There's no action sheet in there. It was in there. I asked it to be changed from the superintendent doing the presentation to me. So all of you, though, are aware that the Board of Education every 2 years reappoints the superintendent or appoints the superintendent, takes action on the superintendent's contract. We met as a board and had some discussion, and now is the time to take action on the superintendent's contract for what would begin on July 1st, 2019, and would continue to June 30th of 2021. Any discussion or comments or a motion?
I will make the motion that we extend Superintendent Frank Schofield's contract for two more years starting in July of this year and going for 2 years past that, whatever the dates they are, 19 through 21?
Yes.
There you go.
All right. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second that.
All right. It has been moved and by Christy Cooley and seconded by Jenny Johnson, that the Board of Education reappoint the superintendent to a two-year term beginning July 1st, 2019 and continuing through June 30th, 2021. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? You've got a job. Your wife will be happy.
Thanks for all the good things you do.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. And if
discussion, but there are a lot of positive things that are happening.
Thank you.
We certainly encourage that moving forward.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to say anything?
Well, I just think that it's important that you express our gratitude to your wife as well, because we know that she's behind you all the way and your family as well. So it's an appointment not only to you but to your whole family and especially to your wife. Just tell her, express our gratitude to them and take her out to dinner, not on the school district's budget but on your own. So just tell her how much we are very grateful for her, because we know that you put in a lot of time and effort. So
thank you, Superintendent. We do appreciate all that you do. We know our school district is headed in the right direction, and we're doing some really great things. I also love that you are willing to take feedback and have us look at what's best for our students, and I think that's such an important thing, that we always improve instead of just, to borrow a phrase from someone, and not stay on this plateau. You know, it's time to move forward. So I appreciate that we always are wanting to do that. Our next item of business, our discussion items, we have a legislative update. Superintendent.
Well, things are flying fast and furious in the last few days at the legislature. The biggest education conversation right now is related to tax reform. And what will happen with the budget. Currently, as you all have read in the news, the proposal, one proposal that is out there is to simply fund base budgets right now, which would, for our purposes, simply be the base WPU with the adjustment for enrollment increases across the state, and everything else would be withheld or held in reserve until a special session was called by the legislature to reconsider tax reform. We don't know where that's going to go. There have been a number of committee meetings in the last 2 days where people are trying to hammer out a resolution, but nothing has been decided on yet. Nothing has been taken to the floor. And nothing has really been moved on yet. There's still just a lot of conversations. That is probably the biggest issue for us right now, because that will influence everything that has an allocation outside of the WPU. So Representative Eliason's school safety bill would be put on hold until that funding was allocated and released. Any other bills that were promoting school safety, student mental health, the expansion of Safe UT, you know, all of those things are dependent on those additional funds being released. So that is the big question right now. The conversations that took place last week regarding the Teacher Student Success Act, I think, have been very positive, as well as most of the conversations surrounding school fees with Representative Lisenby's bill. There were two things that were being considered to be added to the school fees bill. One was adding, and you'll need to help me again remember these two, Jeff. The first was adding admission to school dances, so your prom, homecoming, et cetera. They were going to consider that as a fee and would be eligible for fee waiver. The other was, do you recall, Jeff? It was in the business administrators meeting notes.
Yeah, let's see. They did have a provision that deposits for laptops, which we just put into our fee schedule, would not be considered fees as long as they're completely refunded at the end of the year. Was one of the provisions.
So the insurance would have to be refunded.
It would have to be a true deposit that was refunded at the end of the year to not be considered a fee.
And then my understanding is they also they were going to not allow fees on textbooks, but they've postponed that for a year before it's adopted. So
that bill, we'll still have to see where it lands, what the final vote is from the legislature. Once that happens, we will sit down and put the bill next to the board rule, and we will go through line by line and identify what revisions might need to be made to our practices, what things need to be put in policy, and what actions by the board we will need to put on our agendas moving forward, because there will be some changes regarding the fee schedule. You know, for a while there, one of the conditions was that the fee schedule would have to be approved in its own hearing. That is no longer the case. It can be approved in just a regular meeting of the board, but there are some additional notice requirements, as there are with certain other board decisions that get made. So those have been some of the biggest issues that have been discussed recently. There was a bill proposing that Medicaid reimbursement be used only to reimburse the only be used to reimburse the person providing the service. That was an attempt to provide more pay for speech-language pathologists. That did not make it out of committee. There were concerns by the legislative committee of allocating funds to address one group of individuals within education as opposed to addressing the funding needs of educators as well, and they did speak to some of those specific issues. So that is something that will probably be advocacy from the Utah Speech Hearing Association to consider putting our speech-language pathologists on the same pay structure as we do with our occupational therapists and our physical therapists, but the legislative action didn't make it out of committee, so that's not currently going anywhere.
What about seat belts on buses?
Currently, the legislation for seat belts on buses has not gone very far. There have been concerns from multiple angles regarding the cost. The concern from risk management and some people in the legislature is the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has made their official statement in support of seatbelts on buses. The state of California is requiring seatbelts on all buses, and there are some districts in the state of Utah who have decided that moving forward, all of their new buses will have seatbelts. So it is an issue that for this legislative session appears to have stalled, no pun intended, but I believe it is something that is going to continue to go up as it appears to be gaining traction around the country and somewhat in our state.
What additional cost does that add to a bus, Jeff?
$10,000.
It was about $15,000, I think, to put seatbelts on a bus.
Yeah. Now, that's for that's to purchase a new bus with seatbelts, not to retrofit,
right.
Correct?
Yeah, I think. I thought it was $12,000 to $15,000 to retrofit them as well. So if we were to retrofit all of our buses, but right now a bus is about $125,000, so that would increase it by 10%. Yeah. So.
Have they talked about when the special session is going to be held?
I haven't heard yet. The only thing generally I've heard is summer.
I heard April.
Will they be doing it as soon as April? I'm not sure.
Late spring.
And how does that impact our ability, interest-based bargaining? And
that was my question is,
well,
if we don't get a WPU increase, are we able to, how do we negotiate contracts?
What we should receive is we should receive a WPU increase because they're talking about funding the base budget, which would be the WPU, plus enrollment growth. So we should still receive our WPU allocation that would allow us to move forward with negotiations. It would not allow us to move forward with the supplemental items that would come, for example, through the TSSA, the teacher student success accounts. It wouldn't allow us to move forward with discussions of school safety, which does create some challenges for us because there may be, depending on the amount of money that comes through the Eliason bill, that could create situations where we want to use our general fund to supplement those to really accomplish something meaningful. That would generally be part of negotiations, and without those funds, it limits our ability to take that action. So it could potentially push us back a year in terms of being able to implement some things that we've discussed we really would like to move forward with but are dependent on the funding. So it I don't know that it will hurt us in terms of our ability to manage employee and contract negotiations, but in terms of really being able to move forward with some of the comprehensive plans that we've been discussing, it does hamstring us up there.
But if they don't give us some kind of increase, then it's going to hurt us because we won't be able to cover insurance costs or Social Security.
And that's why what they've defined as base budgets for education, they said WPU plus enrollment growth.
And they're talking to 4%.
The 4% there.
It was 3%, but yeah.
That's what I saw last.
I saw 3%, but 3% won't cover. what we need, right?
It would be tight. It won't give us what we'd like, no.
No. I mean, that will just barely cover
the... Between 2-3% is what's necessary to keep things moving with...
Exactly.
With the increased annual increase of cost of doing business. So, yes, anything less than a 3% is really makes it extremely difficult. 3% is still challenging. It won't allow us to do everything for our staff that we would like to do, nor that we were planning
It'll
on doing.
Just be able to
it keeps us
it
functioning.
From not losing anybody.
Correct.
Cutting, but it doesn't give anything extra.
Yeah, it makes it so we don't have to cut, but it doesn't add to.
I thought we were at 4% asking for 5.5.
We were.
It depends on which day.
Yeah.
For our position test.
Yes, that was our position with our handout and everything else, because we have said that 3.5 is to keep the doors open.
Yeah.
Anything above that is to cover our health insurance and our whatever. So.
So we don't know what it would be.
We don't know for sure what it's going to be. It sounds like you're hearing that they're coming down a little bit from the 4%.
The one article, I think it was the Tribune, indicated 3.
Because they're trying to pull back so they have room to do their tax cut and their tax reform.
I did receive notice today that the Senate and the House have agreed on the 4%. So I do believe we're solid with that number. But it's there's still work to do, and the session's not quite over yet. So
one last question about the letter grade given to schools. I read something that it was stuck in a Senate committee. Is that true? That it was passed out of the House, but the Senate wasn't going to release it for a full vote?
I have to double check on that one. I believe that's been released. The Senate has been very supportive of public ed this session. I've been able to speak with our legislators, Senator Sandall and Senator Hilliard, and express gratitude for some of their votes. Specifically, when I was down there last Monday and said they had just finished some votes, and I was able to run into them and say, hey, we really appreciate this. Tell us what you're thinking about this bill. They've been quite supportive of public ed, and I think they are willing to look at the current reporting structure that's on the State Board website, and they're supportive of that. So I haven't heard any word that the initiative to move away from letter grades to the current dashboard that the state has provided is hitting any major resistance. But that's something we'll have to follow up on and double check.
All right, and as we said, until midnight Thursday, who knows? And, I think we're glad that tax reform has put a little bit of slowdown, but it might also slow down everything else in the state is our concern.
And it potentially could be very scary for education.
Well, it could. And, one of the discussions when the Speaker of the House came in and presented this tax bill, one of the questions was, you've always promised us that when the income tax fund got high enough, you would fully fund public education. Now you're saying it's too high. We've got to give a tax reduction and equalize the tax base. So, it's a very challenging situation. And the thing is, we've also found that we have to work with these people. And so working for some consensus is helpful in compromise, and I love that our state legislature and governor try really hard to be very civil and listen, and so we try to do the same thing back, and so hopefully we can get to some closure, and then as this tax cut, tax reapportionment, whatever we want to call it, takes place, we need to make sure we keep being heard by our local legislators. I'm going to look at that bill, but I'm going to have us move on to our construction updates, the timeline and dates. And is this you, Jeff, or Superintendent? Great. While I look at this bill.
Okay, so just to update you on the construction projects that we're looking at right now as a district, we've got the Hillcrest Elementary rebuild, and the Hillcrest Rebuild Committee met with DWA contractors and VCBO architects to review the value engineering we talked about. We identified $50,000 that we voted to take the value engineering savings. There's another $230,000 that we're considering, but we needed more information. They needed to redraw some things and show us what those would look like and give us some more estimates for kind of a mid-range of some of the things that we're doing there. So we're still planning to get with them and look at those and see if we can value engineer a little bit more savings out of that, out of the Hillcrest project. And DWA plans to start construction the last week in March. So they're ready to go. And
so are we going to have a groundbreaking? I'd like to be there with the first shovel.
Yeah, are we going to do a groundbreaking?
We should be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we normally, we have always done a groundbreaking, Jeff, so we need one.
All right. We'll get on it.
Okay.
Well, but you know what? We've always just done this symbolic shovel, and usually the either the architects or the construction people have had the hard hats for us, and we've all gone and we've done that. So even if it's not the first day they start doing it, we didn't. You know, at Logan High, it was a little, it wasn't the first time something was done there, but we need to schedule that sometime this spring and maybe when it's a little better weather rather than just before spring break. But I think it needs to be some symbolic groundbreaking and invite the community and get the students involved.
I'd give up my shovel for a student at Hillcrest. I think we need to include the shovel for the students.
And that's what we did at Bridger. We had five students who were representative of all of the different students, and we stood by them, and those students did the shovel. So we do it some different creative ways over the years, so that's a great idea. So let's see if we can get, you know, if you can get that committee to work on when we can do a groundbreaking. That would be really fun to do some photos. And
if it was before.
It would be.
The day they start getting that.
Yeah.
All right.
See what you can work on.
I will.
Winner from each grade or something. For each of us or something.
Okay. Our next item.
Oh, let me finish.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
I just want to update you on Ells Elementary rebuild. We had four architect firms respond to our SOIQ. We're going to interview all four of those tomorrow. And we had six contractors responded to our CMGC RFP. And we've screened them and plan to interview four of the selected firms, it looks like, on Tuesday. So we're moving that forward and plan to bring both of those for approval to the board on our meeting on March 26th.
If I can just add, just so you all are aware, as a board, Jeff and I, as we discussed this, we were really excited. We have a number of, well, everyone who we have screened who will be interviewing has solid experience working with historicity, either in the preservation of existing buildings or in the preservation of the historic character of the building. As we screened them, it was really exciting to see some of the specific examples that they pushed, that they shared with us, and their background and their thought process that they go through when determining what is the best approach for a historical building. So I'm really excited for the interviews. I think looking at the candidates that we have, both for the architect and the CMGC, we have some very, very solid people that, regardless of who we go with, we're going to have people who really understand the process and they understand how to work through it.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Our next item of discussion is board development. Most of you know that Utah School Boards Association provides professional development for board members through their Master School Boards Award, or the MBA. You can say you've received your MBA. The requirements, there are a lot of different requirements, and there are different levels. So Larry, you'll do year one, Frank, year two. Christy and I just keep repeating year four, year four, year four. And part of our responsibility is, Jenny's on year three, and part of my responsibility and Christy's responsibility is that we help mentor others. And it's encouraged that we do some things as a board. And so we're going to try to as a leadership, and also you've given input on this specific item, but come up with items we can do now and throughout the year instead of November. We're madly filling all of our requirements in one board meeting. So we talked about having the board read the book, Turn the Ship Around, and I've asked the superintendent to give an overview of the book. It looks like they have not come in yet.
Not quite. They're on their way. Tracking numbers show they are on their way. I'm excited to read this book again. This is one of my favorite books on leadership that I've ever read. And it's embarrassing. My wife got it for me for Christmas one year, and it sat on the shelf for probably a month or two till I finally pulled it down, and I couldn't put it down. It's one that I just sat up reading until late at night. I think I read it in 2 days, and then I've read it multiple times since. And I love the principles that it teaches, and I love the just the story it tells of what was done to create the type of environment that they did on the submarine. What I'd like to do with you all right now is in the action sheet you have two proposed reading schedules. One of them is much more condensed. It has us discussing a portion of the book in every board meeting between now and the end of the year, and it has us finishing the book by the end of June, I believe. The other one stretches it out, where we only discuss it once a month, allows for a little bit more leisurely reading, but we would finish it next November. So I'd present both of those to the board so you can decide which of the two we want to follow.
Both have us ending November 12th.
It's supposed to be like June 11th and June 12th.
That should probably be June 11th.
Sorry, that should be June 11th and June 12th. I apologize for that one.
November, we don't jump from June 11th to November 12th.
Nope, okay. That should be understood. So apologize for that typo.
Okay, I just wanted to make
sure
I wasn't...
What I'd like to do tonight is have you watch this short video. This is an overview of the book. It is a cut and paste of a presentation by Captain Marquette. So it's much shorter than his actual presentation. When he does seminars, they're, of course, much longer, and he goes into a little more detail. But this will cover a wide range of the ideas that are in the book. So I'd like to have us watch this. It also gives you an idea of what his voice is. So as you're reading, you have a little bit of an idea there of what we're looking at.
Is
so,
Jack Reacher the main character?
Is who?
Jack Reacher.
No, but they do talk about their war games and some activities. The main character with a distinctive name that you will read about a couple times is Sled Dog. You will read about Sled Dog a couple times. So I'm going to go back here to make sure that the volume is...
And I did ask the superintendent, we're going to make sure everybody has a printed copy. Yes.
Yeah.
both torpedoes in tubes 1, 2, 3, and 4. Slide down, open outer doors, right? And I thought about it. And you know what? They were right. So at that point, I vowed never to give another order. And if you came down to my submarine, it would have been very confusing. Because you couldn't have pointed. It would have been hard to say, well, who's the captain here? Because you wouldn't have seen me giving orders. I did retain one order. The final order to launch a weapon, a torpedo or a missile, I kept with me. Because I felt that since that was going to result in the deaths of other human beings, that I didn't want that on anyone's conscience but mine. That was my moral and ethical responsibility. But even though everything else, in the Navy there's long lists of things that says the captain has to authorize, the captain should authorize. You got a couple nukes in your group, they'll tell you it's true. Captain out there, submerge the ship, get on the reactor, shut down the reactor, connect the shore power, divorce the shore power, on and on, break for that, on and on and on, pages of these things. I just refused to give those orders. What we replaced it with was intent. Instead of giving instructions, if you want your people to think, don't give instructions, give intent. So they're going to be, hey, what do you want me to do? Well, left full rudder, steady course 255. No! So what are we trying to accomplish here today? Well, we're trying to get positioned so that when the enemy submarine comes through, okay, so where do you think we should position the ship? Maybe over here. Good idea. Go there. You give intent to them, and they give intent to you. So my officer stopped requesting permission. And every other submarine, captain, request permission to submerge the ship. Submerge the ship. Submerge the ship, aye! On Santa Fe, captain, I intend to submerge the ship. Very well. And they did it. And it might seem like it's a very small, nuanced change of language, but it was hugely powerful because the psychological ownership now shifts to them. They need to discover the answer. Otherwise, you're always the answer man. You can never go home and eat dinner. And so we started doing this. And it was hugely powerful. Actually, we went another step. Then I got smarter and I said, when the officer said, captain, I intend to submerge the ship. I would ask him, well, what do you think I'm thinking right now? And he'd look at me, hard to tell. I'm guessing you're wondering whether it's safe. Bingo! I said, well, convince me it's safe. The captain intends to submerge the ship. All men are below. Hatches are shut. Ships rigged for dive. I check the bottom deck. The submarine's in the water that's been assigned to us. Then later I would ask them, is it the right thing to do? And they would say, well, yes, sir, because our mission requires that to be. And these are the two pillars that I think support this idea of giving control. These are the two pillars that need to be in place. The technical competence, which is represented by, is it safe? And the organizational clarity, which is represented by, is it the right thing to do? And you put those things in place, and then you can give control. And you put those things in place. And you are off to the races. So think about what's happening now. My officers are starting to think like me, because they have to think like, where should we do the ship? And so the guys below them. Now this took 24 hours to happen. It took a couple of years for the full implementation, but immediately there was change. The officers are thinking like me. So pretty soon I could go in the engine room, find the engine room lower level watch, who was taking logs in the lube oil pumps, and he would know what the submarine was doing. He would know whether we were tight, close to the enemy, it was time to be quiet. Or whether we had backed out a little bit, this may be a good time to change filters and make a little bit of noise. A year later, we received another inspection. The inspecting team gave us the highest grade they had ever seen. Not that year, not in the Pacific. Why? I mean, this crew had a captain and a dummy. It's because that needle started moving up. And on another submarine, there was one guy in charge, one guy giving orders, one guy thinking, and 134 people doing what they're told. I don't care how smart you are. On my submarine, I got 100. the authority to where the information is. You mean the software engineer can decide whether we ship the software? Yeah. You mean my salesman can close the deal? Well, up to $1,000. No. Yes. Whatever the price? Yes. What does it take to make that happen? Now, if you're picturing a lot of people out there doing crazy things and a bunch of arrows going in a bunch of different directions, you have the wrong picture. You create the environment so that those people are out there making decisions as if the CEO were standing right behind them. And if it's not the same decision, it's actually a better decision because they have the information. And not only will you get better speed of execution, because now you don't have this delay, what happens is those people feel like they matter because they're thinking. You engender thinking. You create the environment for thinking. The secret is nothing like that is hard. There's nothing hard. The only thing that's hard is you. It will feel wrong. You've been genetically and culturally programmed to take charge and make it happen. Take control and attract followers. And what you want is to give control and create leaders. It will feel wrong, and you will repeatedly start down this path if you so choose, and then you'll be angry at yourself like I was. And you will have a failure. You'll go back to the old way. You will pick yourself up, and you will go again. You will go again. And by doing so, you will achieve the greatest thing possible. You will have achieved greatness, not because of the deeds and acts that you did, but because you set an environment where the people around you and their families and their schools and their organizations and their businesses, they've achieved greatness. That would be the greatest thing of all. Go forth and be great!
So that's just an overview of kind of the big ideas in the book. Now, as we read this as a board, you'll hopefully see some things that we currently have in place in the district that we have because of the concepts in the book. The idea of clarity and competence being the precursors to allocating control. And having that clarity being clarity of purpose. Is it the right thing to do? The competence being the technical competence. As we've put our flagship plan together, the reasons why the things that we have in the flagship plan are labeled the way they are, communicated the way they are because of the concepts in Turn the Ship Around. So as we read this, hopefully we'll see a couple of things. One is the things that we're currently trying to do to apply these principles in our work as a district. And the second thing that will be obvious as we go through it is what he said there at the end, is it's you try it and some things go well and something doesn't quite go right, so you keep trying and you keep refining and getting better at that. We've read this book twice with our administrators. We continue to reference it. We'll continue to reference it again this summer when we meet with them and we talk about how are we applying these principles in our work as administrators in providing a situation in our district, an environment in our district where you don't have a leader-follower structure, but you do work to a leader-leader environment, which allows everybody to be really optimizing their impact for the betterment of students. So I'd be happy to have any discussion right now. Those who have read the book, any things that you felt were key principles that stuck out to you the first time you read it, things that stuck out from the video that you'd like to make sure that we talk about more as we go through it, discussion about the structure. But this is something I love reading this book. I love talking about it as a group. And last time we did this as a board, I really enjoyed the conversations we had as a Board of Education.
So which schedule do you want to do? Every board meeting or do you want to... And one of the suggestions that Frank has made is to do, instead of doing that now, like we're doing right now, and it's great when it's at 6:27 instead of 9 o'clock at night. You know, when it's 6:27, it's easier to stop and have a discussion. Frank approached me and asked And so I want you to think about this, and we'll discuss it more because I want you to think about it with your schedules. He approached me and said, what about having workshops? And some of you remember we used to have workshops and we sat around. We found that was sometimes that structure was a little challenging, partly because we had so many things we had to approve. We couldn't, you know, to only do once a month with land trust plans, that kind of thing was a challenge. So we went back to having regular board meetings with a discussion section. Frank suggested perhaps we meet at 3 o'clock and go from 3:30, somewhere in there, and have a work session or this and other work session items. Then we start the regular board meeting, and then we end. Go home, look at your schedules. The superintendent and I discussed it briefly. We didn't have the superintendent was with district administration at a conference this last week, so we didn't have a meeting to discuss it. But think about, would that be something we do once a month, perhaps the time we don't do a site visit? You know, is this something we start in June? Just look at your schedules and let's have this as a discussion item in our next board meeting. I would like to have us on the March 26th. Myself, I'd like us to have the superintendent start us with chapters 1 through 5. What are your feelings on that? Larry?
I'll be in Philadelphia on March 26th.
Oh, you're going early. So maybe we need to do April 9th then. Okay, so if we started April 9th, and then, you know, and we could change it, you know, if we wanted, do you want to do it every board meeting? That's the question.
My preference is to spread it out.
Okay. Frank, how are you feeling? Christy?
I'm good either way because I've read it before, so I would take the opinion of those that have not read it.
Okay. Jenny?
I'm fine either way.
Okay, then let's spread it out, do it once a month. One thing I did ask is that we each, Christy and I learned this the hard way, said, what version do you want of it? And I got the digital version rather than a written copy. It's really hard to discuss something you don't have in front of you. So, Superintendent, how are we going to have people get the audio copy?
If you'd like to bring, if you want an audio copy and you have a device that you'd like to have that downloaded on, the Audible book, if you just bring that to us, we'll order it and use the district card and we'll download it directly to your device. So if you have something you would like to have the audio book on, just bring that device to the district office and we'll take care of getting that downloaded.
I loved listening to him. He's the one who does it.
Oh, does he?
I think it's the captain. It's the captain, and he says it in ways that is really interesting, and I found I really liked, and I actually, because I had them get me the digital version, I ended up buying my own on Kindle. But I found I really loved listening to him in the car or when I was mopping my floor or whatever. So I'd recommend it. It's available for you. It's really fascinating to listen to him. So we will go with, but we won't start this. Okay, we will take the upper schedule with starting on April 9th.
Starting on April 9th and then one conversation per month, correct?
And we'll try to remind people who's in charge the next month. And you don't have to do it like someone else has done the discussion leading. You can use your creativity, but we would prefer that it be on the book rather than something else.
And I think one thing we wanted to emphasize that we did last time is we don't want any board members to feel that they have to give a presentation on the section that it's more of a facilitated dialogue.
All right. Our next item is our calendar items. There are a couple I want to go over. Tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. is the Mount Logan Middle School Pancake Breakfast. It will be held where? At Mount Logan Middle School.
In the cafeteria.
So in the main cafeteria, and everyone who can, everybody who's in this room, you're all invited to be there when you're, and you don't even have to wear your apron anymore, do they? Because Because we have other people.
Darlene and Rachel and Nikki have been doing just an absolutely outstanding job getting everything set up and taken care of.
And because
phenomenal.
They do the cooking, that gives all of us, those of us in this room, the opportunity to talk with teachers, staff members. I've had some great conversations. I know others of you have also sit at a table, talk with people as they eat, welcome them. It's just a great opportunity. Tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, those who are on the Ellis Committee will begin with the interviewing of architects. Then you notice we have listed our parent-teacher conferences at the elementary schools and Mount Logan Middle School and Logan High and Mount Logan Middle School. And then I want to emphasize the March 20th, 6 o'clock, regional USBA dinner. That will be here in this room, since I'm the region representative, and we'll all meet here. We will have representatives from USBA, and the main item in this meeting will be to go over what happened in the legislature. And then we have the orchestra concerts and others. Notice it says March 28th through April 2nd. That should be NSBA training rather than USBA training. And then, of course, we have spring break, April 1st through 5th. And then we get fast and furious into the end of school activities. So any other questions, additions?
So tomorrow night is the patron.
Yes, the patron.
What time is it?
6 p.m. They have their community council from 5 to 6. So they asked the members of the diploma committee who are on the community council asked if we could meet from 6 to 7 so they can attend both meetings.
Will you be reporting on that at next board?
That's the plan, yes.
And if anyone can attend, if you would be able to attend the school community council meeting tomorrow there, please let me know so we don't have more than one of us show up to that school community council meeting. And then anyone who can come, and it is in which room?
The presentation tomorrow should be in the media center. That's where we've been planning to hold it.
Nicer than in the auditorium. The auditorium is just so big.
Yeah, we haven't generally had enough attendees at these that the auditorium would be the best setting. We feel like the media center should be large enough, and it still has the screen that we can plug into and display information.
All right, I appreciate all of you. We had a good visit today at Bridger.
Just one thing. I thought I read in the Herald Journal that that tiered diploma was going to be here at 101 West Center.
It's not what.
No, it's been at the high school.
Okay.
I'll double check.
But I could be wrong.
Yeah, our information that we've sent out has been the high school. So let me double check and see.
It's good to know. So. That's always good to know. And at Bridger, it was interesting. Principal Taggart talked about, had us look at the smart boards versus Apple TVs and teachers who had changed to the one, and we got input from them. We were able to see them teaching phonics lessons, which was just delightful. I've asked... Maybe Jed, you could get these to us. I love those phonics rules. They know when it makes a long sound and a short sound with that. I've never seen those before. I would love a copy of those phonics rules that all of our elementary schools are using. It's fascinating.
They were teaching that, and I'm like, that's a rule I've never known.
Yeah, and so anyway, it was...
It definitely does say 101 West Center.
Does it say that?
We
better send that.
We'll send a reminder out.
And then if we do, maybe we can even get a retraction or a correction in there for tomorrow.
We'll reach out to them.
If you'll do that immediately. Thank you, Larry, for seeing that.
I'm glad you saw
it. Yeah, sometimes we can. But if not, we can at least perhaps get it on their website. And we'll definitely, if we can send it out ParentLink. Thank you, Larry, for seeing that. The other thing we saw is they are doing collaborative conversations. They found that a lot of our students are lacking vocabulary and or the ability to communicate verbally. And so we went into a fifth grade class and watched this collaborative conversation. And it was just wonderful to see the kids talking, using vocabulary words. They were talking about science and sharing with each other and going and talking to someone else and trying to persuade them to their point of view. And I, as a former debater, I loved what we saw taking place. And one of the things that Principal Taggart really emphasized is that this year they have two literacy coaches, and that that is made possible because they have those two literacy coaches and all of the work that is taken place in their school and the great things that are happening there. So it was a good visit, and appreciate your time today. Appreciate your input and your efforts at being prepared. Thank you to our staff. We appreciate all of you. Thank you, Shelley, for making sure going from 12:30 earlier today until now that we had something to snack on earlier. And you're welcome to drop by there on your way out. Also, everyone, there's food in the superintendent's office. So please do that. And we just appreciate all of you and all the work you do to make our district a better place for students. And we will adjourn this meeting at 6:38.
You called it tonight, didn't you?
I was like, that's the way we did that.
We shouldn't be in a rush.
Way to go, Dave.
Like, what?